There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to NFL Live on this Monday afternoon. Our timeline this afternoon at 11:13 this morning. Lavonte David had arthroscopic surgery on a torn meniscus. The belief, though, right now is that the injury will affect him during the regular season, won't affect him during the regular season. And coming up on NFL Live, Tom Brady has a new deal. You will hear from the Patriots quarterback coming up in just a bit. Just days, I might add, after his 42nd birthday. We're glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. I am Wendy Nix with Josina Anderson, Mike Tannenbaum, and Damian Woody. It's that time. Hard Knocks. You ready?
Oh, yeah.
All right. The debut coming your way tomorrow. It will feature John Gruden and his Oakland Raiders. So that is where we start this afternoon. We begin with Antonio Brown, who has participated in just one practice with the Raiders during training camp. He was forced to see a foot specialist over the weekend. He is having considerable trouble with his feet, which has limited his ability to work out on the field. And with our apologies, viewer discretion advised, if you're squeamish, you might want to look away, because this is what he's dealing with. Via an Instagram story, this is exactly what the problem looks like as he continues to try and figure out how to find a remedy. No one has more 100 catch seasons than does Antonio Brown. He currently shares the NFL record with Brandon Marshall. Each of those six seasons have come consecutively. That's easily the longest streak in NFL history. Marvin Harrison, the only other player with more than three straight 100 catch seasons. And we'll see if business keeps booming in Oakland, because it is Monday. Training camp is in full swing now. So we will start with overreaction Monday. I told you about the streak. Here's what I say. Brown's 100 reception streak will end. Is this an overreaction, Damian, or no?
I think it's an overreaction. I think for a couple of reasons. One, the defense, the Oakland Raiders defense, there's still a lot of questions left to be seen about whether how much of an improvement that they'll make this year. If you fall, we all know if you start falling behind games, what do you start doing? You start chucking the ball. When you have a great receiver like Antonio Brown, he's going to see a lot of targets. So I know he doesn't have that connection with Big Ben in Pittsburgh, but he's going to see a lot of targets this year.
There's so much, Mike, incentive for Oakland to make this work. He's John Gruden's guy. They went out and got him. They brought him there. The numbers are huge. You would think if John Gruden has anything to say about it, and he does, there'll be plenty of targets for Antonio Brown.
There will be, but I'm going to say that it's not an overreaction, and I don't believe he's going to get 100 receptions, although I think it's going to be a good signing, and I think the Raiders are going to be productive on offense. When you look at John Gruden and the most success he's had, it's when they've been able to run the ball and use play action. And I think by drafting Josh Jacobs in the first round, that was not by accident. I think that's who they want to be. That's going to be their identity. They also signed Tyrell Williams from the Chargers. So between acquiring Williams from the Chargers as well as drafting Jacobs, I think you're going to see Brown be productive but not get 100 yards, 100 catches.
Break the tie here, JoJo.
I think it is an overreaction simply because even though they have those assets, as you mentioned, with Tyrell and obviously Renfro, your guy.
That's right.
Your boy. I mean,
it is.
I still think he's going to have a plethora of the receptions. I mean, he can make that up. Let's say this foot injury cost him the first couple weeks or the first 3 weeks. I mean, he is still going to see a bulk of the targets coming his way, and he can make that up quickly. But I will admit I am concerned, because I'm trying to figure out, just from looking at that picture on Instagram, how do your feet even get to that point, let alone, you know, who's beside him and that's scrubbing her side. That's another thing, but I'm just like, it's so bad. And you do have to be concerned that you can create compensation issues with his feet being like that. That could, you know, lead to it lingering. But, you know, just target-wise, I feel like he'll be over 100.
JoJo, let me ask you this, Mike. I'm sorry, quickly, because you referenced it. Do you think he'll miss games? Will he be ready week one, in your estimation?
I think it's possibly that he could be hampered
Fair enough.
I think it's possible that he could be hampered because even if you do come back, you know, I am concerned at how you're bearing your weight on those feet. And if that, you know, then in turn creates an issue down the line because your feet are everything when you're a receiver. I mean, you got to stick, jab, you know, turn. And they just look, I mean, at least visually, they look pretty bad.
They do. Yeah. You know, there's no question about that.
It's interesting. Damian brings up an interesting point about the weakness of the Raider defense. And last year, I worked with Adam Gase, who was the head coach and play caller of the Miami Dolphins. John Gruden knows that there's weaknesses on the Raider defense. The best way for the Raiders to play defense is to keep them on the sideline. Best way to do that, run the ball with Josh Jacobs. And again, I think Antonio Brown's going to be productive in this offense. I just think they're going to be a much more balanced offense, and they spent a first-round pick on Jacobs. I think that's a player we're going to be talking about quite a bit as we head into the season.
Well, Antonio Brown has only missed 3 games due to injury in the last 6 seasons, so he's certainly been available, although to Josina's point, it doesn't look good. But again, he saw a foot specialist over the weekend. Clearly, they're going to try and do everything they can to get him back on the field practicing.
They didn't give him new feet,
ready
though.
To go. They sources say
I'm just
they
saying.
do not do that.
Robert Anderson's good in Green Bay. I don't know if he's that good.
Nope. All right. Listen, let's talk about another player who is sidelined temporarily, that is, but still due to injury, and that is Colts quarterback Andrew Luck. He continues to be on the sidelines. It's that nagging calf injury. And the team says he's making considerable progress. That may be true, but they also agree and say he will not practice again this week. And at some point, I think you have to wonder if this is cause for concern. Perhaps one reason why is his history of injury. Take a look. Calf, we know, not the only injury that he's had. He's missed 18 games in his career with right shoulder injuries alone. We include the entirety of the 2017 season. He also sat out 7 games with a lacerated kidney, 1 game with a concussion. Last year was the first time since 2014 that Luck played all 16 games, and the results were, well, what they were. As Andrew Luck goes, so go the Colts. So this on Overreaction Monday. Andrew Luck, JoJo, will start 16 games this season.
I think he will not.
So overreaction.
So it is an overreaction. I am concerned with the calf injury, particularly when you look at someone like what happened with Victor Cruz when I was covering him a couple years ago. They thought that was just a minor calf injury. Next thing you know, he's not even playing for the New York Giants anymore. Obviously, the example is out there, what happened game 5 in the NBA Finals with Kevin Durant and that turning into, you know, starting with the calf and then and being an Achilles rupture. So I am concerned, even though he's expressing optimism. I think in an interview with Peter King, he admitted that he's not improving at the rate that he would like. But I did talk to Eric Ebron last night, their starting tight end. He said that they're getting mental reps with Andrew Luck, that he's still running the meetings and he's still quizzing them on, you know, what is the alternative routes to this coverage? What's the complementary route to this coverage and all those other things? So they got to be ready. But you are concerned for guys like Devin Funchess, who is a free agent wide receiver, who's not getting that reps right now with Andrew Luck. And he's got to be on that same page at some point. So because of his history and because of the fact that the calf, you know, can be a lingering thing, I am concerned that he will not play a full slate of games.
I thought we should sort of hold off and hit the pause button until now. This week, again, I'm not saying it's the end of the world, but for me, this was the first week where I said, God, it doesn't look that good that he's still not practicing, and it's a little concerning to me.
Yeah, I agree with Josina, which is I don't think he's going to play in 16 games. I think my experience with calf injuries, they are hard to predict. It's a weird sort of muscle and body part from a standpoint of how quickly they come back. They don't always seem to coincide with what the trainers say. And Andrew Luck is an athletic, mobile guy. He's not going to put himself out there until he feels like he can move around, get out of harm's way. I think Josina makes a really good point. Kevin Durant, every athlete knows what happened. And whether or not it was related or not in terms of his calf leading to the Achilles tendon issue, obviously that's in the press, everyone's mind right now. So I think Luck, they're going to proceed with caution. He is their franchise. And look, Jacoby Brissett has played good football for them. That's why you have an experienced backup quarterback. And I think they're going to take their time. And if he had to miss a game or two for the benefit of the season, I could see them doing that.
I'm going to say it's not an overreaction. I feel like when he hurt his shoulder and had the shoulder ordeal, that really scared him. And I think one of the best things he has done to this point is being forthright about where he stands at with that injury. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, this whole new term of load management, and I think it's going to carry over into the NFL, especially with a guy like Andrew Luck. They're going to proceed with caution. Remember, we're about, what, a month away from the regular season?
34 days.
Okay, that's still a good amount of time. And when you look at the Indianapolis Colts, one of the areas that they improved the most was in the offensive line up front blocking. So, you know, I don't see Andrew Luck running for his life like he's done in the past. He's got one of the better offensive lines blocking for him up front. So I think the combination of the two, I could see him starting all 16 games.
But, Damian, as a former player, it's one thing to have load management in the NBA when you have the same group of people game in, game out. As Josina mentioned, you know, they just acquired Devin Funchess. Like, those reps, to me, are critical this time of year. And doesn't that concern you from developing a continuity from an offensive perspective?
It doesn't necessarily concern me right now. I think once we get deeper into the preseason, then I think you start raising some red flags. But right now, I mean, he went through the spring. He's gotten to this point where he's being cautious right now. But again, we're still 34 days away, so there's still time.
Tom Brady has a new deal. The 2-year extension keeps the Patriots quarterback under contract through 2021. He'll make $23 million this year. It's an $8 million increase and makes him the 6th highest paid quarterback in the league, according to our Adam Schefter, ties him with Drew Brees. The Patriots, in turn, get an additional $5.5 million of salary cap space this year. Here is Tom Brady.
It is what it is. That's a good line. So whoever said it, it's very pertinent. So, like I said, there's a lot of guys who have, you know, 1 year left on their contract. You know, so the situation, I got 1 year to go, and we'll see what happens. I'm ready to go this year, and that's really what matters, and that's where my focus is. It's a unique situation I'm in, you know. I'm 20th year with the same team, and, you know, be 42 years old. So pretty much uncharted territory, I think, for everybody. And, you know, I'm going to go out there and do the best I can this year and see what happens.
Well, it may be uncharted, but he's certainly navigating the way. And then there's Bill Belichick. You know, he was asked about Tom Brady's extension, and, well, you might not be surprised. Here's what he said.
You know, it's always good to come to an agreement with a player, any player. So, you know, that's a good thing. And I'm not going to talk about the contract, so we'll move on from that. Yeah, Tom's been very consistent throughout the course of his career, and I feel like we're off to a good start in training camp. We all have a long way to go, but I know Tom's worked hard. He's put in a lot of time, a lot of work, as he always does. He's very well prepared. So, you know, we're looking forward to just building this through the season and, you know, continuing to get better on a daily basis.
That's right. That Tom Brady, he may have a future if he plays his cards right. Unreal. Well, he certainly earned the pay bump. He last signed an extension in 2016. The Patriots have made the Super Bowl every season since then, and Brady ranks at or near the top of the league in most passing categories. The only exception, cash earnings, where he ranks 16th among quarterbacks over the last 3 years. Mike Reese joins us now from Allen Park, Michigan, where the Patriots and the Lions are holding joint practice ahead of their preseason game on Thursday. Mike, give us some context on this new deal for Tom Brady.
Definitely, Wendy. You know, you look at the fine print and you see it is a 2-year extension, but our own ESPN's Field Yates reported this. Those last 2 years, 2020, 2021, are what's called void years. And basically what it means is they don't exist. They're there for salary cap purposes for the Patriots. So when you heard Tom Brady talk about how there are other players around the league who are in the last year of their contract, that's what he meant. So here's what has to happen between the Patriots and Tom Brady is they need to keep talking about an extension before the end of the 2019 league year for him to play for the organization beyond that. There's a lot of trust built up between them over the last 20 years. The Patriots agree not to put the franchise tag on him, and they feel confident that their relationship, the trust between them, will lead to them to continue to talk and go on a year-to-year basis right now.
Mike, thank you. And I think you can't underscore that enough. This is a unique situation, and 20 years is a long time. One team, one player, Mike, but this isn't a run-of-the-mill extension. So just for some clarity, because when you see it splashed up there on the screen, it's easy to think this is set, put it on the shelf, and we'll revisit this in 2 years. And that's really not the case.
Yeah, I think Mike addressed it. So we're talking about two different things, the salary cap and then the cash to the player. So from a cash standpoint, very simply, he got a raise. He got an additional $8 million, which will make him about the 6th highest paid quarterback this year. So obviously they wanted to address the inequity there. Secondly, from a salary cap standpoint, what they did is they put 2 more years on the contract so they could spread out the signing bonus. Mm-hmm. It could count in all 3 years. And basically by doing that, they were able to create another $5.5 million in salary cap room for the 2019 league year. At the end of the season, they could sit down with Tom Brady and figure out what would be appropriate for next year. And as Mike alluded to, since there's already a relationship there, it's almost like a partnership. I think reasonable minds could get in a room and figure out what 2020 should look like. Importantly now is they could take that $5.5 million they have in room and look at players like Devin McCourty, the quarterback of their defense, Joe Thuney, a really valuable offensive lineman, two free agents at the end of the 2019 season now that they could try to lock up. So there's some strategic value for the Patriots as well.
Damian, you played this game and you played with Tom. Mm-hmm. Is there a way that this isn't, let's say it is a tried and true two-year extension, just for the sake of argument. Mm-hmm. Is there a way that this isn't his last contract?
No.
Do you think that this is it?
No, I don't think this is it at all.
Okay.
Listen, the way Tom takes care of himself, and again, the rules of the game, how the quarterbacks are being protected, and just his mastery of the game, there's nothing that he hasn't seen. You know, when you get to the advanced age that Tom Brady's at right now, like Drew Brees and Philip Rivers and so on and so forth, their game is from the neck up. It's cerebral. So they're able to master the game before you even snap the ball. So this is by no means his last year.
So 40, is 45 reasonable? There's no sense debating it, really. It is what it is, as you heard Tom say. But JoJo, do you agree that this could continue for some time?
I think in his mind, he definitely believes that. He just turned 42 August 3rd, but it's what you have mentally as a goal and then physically what might be the case, not just from your own natural body attrition, but the hurting that somebody else can put on you. I looked at the schedule for the Patriots November 24th. They play the Cowboys. DeMarcus Lawrence might have something to say about that when he's coming around the edge. So he could suffer a hit that makes that not make him not reach 45. I think he feels like he can attain that, but realistically, it is the game of football and somebody might set you on the sideline quicker than you would like.
Which, let's be fair, could happen to a 25-year-old player.
Absolutely.
As well.
And he's not immune from
that.
So,
right. No, mm-hmm. no, he's not. How comfortable would you be giving a new contract, an additional contract to a 44-year-old quarterback if we get that far?
Well, Tom, what he's done, it's historic. And I think Damian makes a really good point. The defensive coordinators I've worked with, they always talked about if Tom Brady knows what to do with the ball before the ball snap, we're dead. We're dead. We have to disguise. Our only chance of success is to make him think once he has the ball. And they would spend 6 days getting ready just for that very aspect of the game. Because if Tom knows where he's going with the ball, you have no chance. So disguise is critical. And that's where he's so valuable is he could get rid of the ball. As Damian said, it's really hard to get to him. And that's why I think longevity for him, Drew Brees and Rivers, they've been able to do that because they could play the game so fast.
And I just wanted 6 more days, apparently, because Tom's been on the winning end of that equation more often than not. Sorry.
No problem. I just wanted to say about his contract that I thought it was interesting that it seems like Drew Brees' contract and the way they restructured that in March seems to be a template for Tom Brady because he's getting $23 million 2019, same way as Drew Brees, and both of them have voidable years in 2020 and 2021, but makes it interesting to think about what when they have to renegotiate and come back to the table, what is this amount going to be? Because this is a quarterback that probably like Kobe Bryant should be getting a balloon payment, like just like Kobe got at the end of his career with Russell at 35. I mean, what is a suitable number? I know he's been taking less than that. You know, he's never made more than 20.5, I think, a year in his career. But that's just crazy to think someone as accomplished as him has never made more than $20.5 million a year in his career.
It's been working for him.
I was going to say.
I mean, and his wife is Giselle.
It's been working for him. I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
There's the longevity.
It helps when your wife is a multimillionaire, too. I'm just saying.
It's true, though. I mean, they have spread the wealth, but it is a formula that has worked extremely well in New England.
Yes.
Right. That's the key.
In New England.
England, New England. That is the key.
We continue now with press coverage courtesy of Sarah Barshoff on J.J. Watt, who said his groin tightened up, but he is okay. Also said he's learned to be smarter and listen to the trainer, so he will give it a day or two. But again, nothing serious. However, a tight groin. We talk now about Ezekiel Elliott, whose standoff, if you can call it that, with the Cowboys has entered its second week. He's amassed $440,000 in fines in his efforts to secure a new deal. Of course, that can be waived if they figure things out. The Cowboys will play their first preseason game on Saturday when they travel to Hawaii to face the Rams. If there's anyone who knows the value of a workhorse running back, it is Jerry Jones. 4 different teams have won the Super Bowl with the NFL's leading rusher on their roster. 3 of those have been the Cowboys with Emmitt Smith, all after Jerry Jones bought the team. The last team to pull that off, the 1998 Broncos with Terrell Davis. Here is Jerry Jones and Dak Prescott on their star running back.
Just know that like so many things, it'll happen. It'll happen. There literally is no concern on my part at all about any time frame. That'll happen. The results are too good for them and too good for the Cowboys. Think about it a minute. The results are too good for them and too good for the Cowboys. That always happens when it's good, that good for both of them.
Obviously, miss the player that he is, but I know that he's getting better. I know that he's working on his game. He's in shape. He's going to make sure that he comes back, and when he's back on this team, he's a better player than when he than before camp or before the spring. And then, he's a good friend. Obviously, you want him out here, but that's business.
Look, everybody's got a poker face. I'll give you that. But Jerry Jones looks pretty calm to me. I'm buying it. You know, he's putting it out there. And for once, I don't think there's a lot of panic here for whatever reason, perhaps because he knows that ultimately they'll figure this out. JoJo.
And you heard it from Jerry Jones. Every time I've talked to my sources on this, I haven't heard anybody fretting. So that's why I continue to say that on Twitter. If there's concern, I've said that with regards to the Melvin Gordon situation. But I talked to a source last night that told me that Ezekiel Elliott continues to express optimism about this situation and that he's very anxious to get back to playing with his teammates. The source also said that they know that Jerry Jones has to make all of these different pieces work with Amari Cooper and Dak Prescott. But the argument that's being made in those conversations is that, listen, only one of those players is at the top of his position, that being Ezekiel Elliott, mentioning that Dak Prescott, even on the league's top 100 list, is not even a part of that list. But at the same time, you also have to account for the fact that Ezekiel Elliott has improved as a playmaker, doubling his receiving yards last year, and may even be not only just a playmaker, but the best playmaker on the team. Lastly, the source made this point that they understand that Jerry Jones is probably concerned also with, from a macro standpoint, resetting the running back market. Yes, we know that that contract most likely is going to exceed Todd Gurley's metrics, right? But by how much, particularly when you have a league that right now might be trying to repress the running back market? You expressed your concern last week with Todd Gurley getting that 14 and then having injuries at the backside of that year last year. But at the same point, you got to pay the man because he's been, at least these are the arguments that are being made, because he's been durable, only missed one regular season each year outside of the year that he was suspended for 6 games.
There's really two different audiences here listening to Jerry Jones speak. When he's speaking publicly, he's talking to the fan base, calm, cool, collective. He's a leader. But I'll tell you this, Saturday night, they play at San Francisco. Tony Pollard, their draft choice out of Memphis. If the offense doesn't look great, and look, he's not going to be Ezekiel Elliott. Internally, the other audience, there will be a little bit more sense of urgency, like, hey, we have a good team. Let's get this deal done. And as the weeks get closer to the regular season, if Dallas sputters on offense in the preseason, that will create a sense of urgency. And he impacts this offense way more than anybody else. So I think what Jerry's trying to do from a leadership standpoint, calm, cool, and collective, talking to my fan base, but internally, those discussions can be very different on Sunday.
But Damian, I'll ask you and Mike Q as well, how important is that pecking order, though? Because you have to presume that Dak Prescott is a priority, and then you can debate Amari Cooper, where he should fall in that trio. But, you know, don't they have to get that done first?
Not necessarily. I think Dallas is a unique situation because we all know that the quarterback position is the most important position in sports, but we also know who really drives the Dallas Cowboys. It's Ezekiel Elliott. He makes Dak Prescott's job a lot easier. He makes the defense's job a lot easier by controlling the time of possession. So my gut tells me that Dak is going to get done. I think Dak will get done first, actually, because I think getting the quarterback out of the way is a huge chip to this whole component. But I will say that deadline spurs action.
Yes.
And once we get up to about a week before the regular season, that's when I think things will really start get going as far as making sure that Zeke is in the fold, because you don't want this guy out week one, week two.
If it even gets to that point.
Right.
That would be terrible for the Dallas Cowboys.
But I also think the order is really important here. Dak Prescott is a winning NFL starting quarterback. They are hard to find. And he's done everything right on the field and off the field. Ezekiel Elliott is a great player. No one's going to deny that. However, he has had multiple off-the-field challenges. And if you reward Elliott before you take care of Dak Prescott, and even for that matter, Amari Cooper, you're sending the wrong message to your locker room. So Prescott's there. He's working hard, doing all the right things. Elliott's holding out. And the other thing that we just sometimes conveniently forget over here, Damien, he has two more years on his contract and they can franchise. So where's he going to go at the
now,
end of the day?
Mike, let me ask you something now. All players the same.
Absolutely
you know,
not.
You. We talk about these things all the time. You know, it sounds great. Like, yes, we got to take care of Dak, and you know,
Amari and
the character. But at the end of the day, we know where the bread is buttered at.
Mm.
And it is Zeke Elliott.
Yeah, that bread may get a little stale because he's under contract for two more years.
Wow. Sounding like a true general manager.
Well, where are the Dallas Cowboys going to go?
Well, they were 7-2 with Amari Cooper after they traded for him last year, and they were first in the NFL on third down offense.
Was Zeke on the team?
He sure was.
Was he running the ball?
Yeah.
Okay.
And,
all right,
some,
okay.
and some people okay. might I make mean,
you,
argument.
You putting on stats like Zeke was out of something.
I'm just saying, it's really important as well.
Hey, and some people might make the argument that Zeke Elliott should be paid more than Amari Cooper. But just to your point, though, even though you're talking about maybe Dak should go first because, you know, you got to reward this guy. Quarterbacks don't grow on trees. He did everything the right way. On the other hand, Dak is there. Amari's there. The one that's not there is Zeke. So, you know, getting Zeke done is what propels him to get him into camp. So you can get Dak done first, but you still have Zeke not practicing with the team. So you need to get him in the fold.
And Josiah, you know, to that But that, you know,
Jerry is calm, though. Jerry is calm.
But, Josina, to your point, that's why I think these preseason games are a little bit more intriguing than usual. Because if Dallas goes out there with Tony Pollard and functions well on offense, it's going to show that they can
come
push
up.
It.
Mike, you're selling the preseason now. We really do need to go. We got to move on.
Wendy, can I one last thing?
Sure. Yeah.
You don't think Jerry Jones likes all of this stuff?
I think he likes it a little bit.
I think he likes this, all this commotion a little bit.
Jerry likes to stir it up a little bit. You know, just everything.
Hey, Zeke is paying attention. Look at his Twitter feed. He retweeted the Dallas Cowboys in that play that Mike Weber made rushing to the outside. So he's seeing what's going on without him as well.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no question.
So,
all right, we'll talk about another holdout, shall we? Or we were. Jaguars defensive end Yannick Ngakoue is a holdout no more because he's checked in with the team, ending his 11-day holdout. He was up against a Tuesday, that's tomorrow, a Tuesday deadline to report to camp to make sure that he was accruing his fourth season and that he would get credit for it, be able to become an unrestricted free agent after the season if he didn't get a new deal or if the team did not use the franchise tag. So, Ngakoue has piled up 29.5 sacks since he joined the league in 2016. That is the most of any player from his draft class, which, by the way, includes Joey Bosa and DeForest Buckner, top 10 picks, my friend.
Talking about a guy who deserves to get paid.
Indeed. On the other hand, Ngakoue lasted until the third round. He's scheduled to make just over $2 million in his last year of his rookie deal. We talked to the head coach, only this time Doug Marrone talking instead about Nick Foles.
Yeah, it's been great. I think that, you know, like I tell everyone before, you know, when you do so much research, like a lot of us do on free agency, where you tend to get, in my opinion, better information, you know, because it's within the league, and a lot of us have a lot of friends within the league. In college, you know, you're relying on the scouts going into those schools, getting it. I felt that when Nick came here with all the information that we had, I felt like I knew him already, you know, in doing so. And then when we brought him in, it's like anything else. I think with any player, not just your quarterback, and obviously people are going to look at the quarterback more than anything else as far as that relationship, you know, that a head coach has with a quarterback. It's been great.
All right, Mike Tannenbaum, this question's for you first because you're on the record here. The Jags, the team to beat in the AFC South.
They are the team to beat in the AFC.
I'm sorry, what?
The AFC.
The South?
Yeah, they're going to the Super Bowl. And I think they're going to beat Kansas City on opening day.
I really thought I might have misheard you, but no.
Absolutely.
Okay.
When you look at this
Tell
team, yeah, go back 2 years ago. They have a championship caliber defense. They were beating New England at halftime. And they've had below average quarterback play the last couple of years. If Nick Foles just plays average, it will be an improvement. Nick Foles won the Super Bowl 2 years ago, and but for a key drop last year, would have been back in at least the NFC Championship game for 2 years in a row. They have a very good offensive line, which means they'll play well on the road because they can run the ball and pass protect. They have a very good running back, and I think they got the best pressure player in the draft in Josh Allen. So I think they check every box, and I think Yeah, I think
they're with the Kansas City team
at home, and I think that's going to be a huge test. And I like Jacksonville at home. But again, when you look at the most important position on the field, which is the quarterback position, they're going from below average to at least above average. Nick Foles is a really good player.
Listen, I'm a Nick Foles advocate. I think there's no question that that has changed dramatically. My concern is that two seasons ago, you're right, that defense was stellar. Last year, it took a step back, and I just don't feel like we know. On paper, I admit that it looks fantastic, but I don't think we know which one, you know, will the real defense please stand up? I'm not convinced.
I mean, they have a lot of those pieces still, and I remember talking to Jalen Ramsey last season and just the fact that they were talking about the impact of everything that was going on with the entire team and how that impacted the defense. So I certainly understand what you're talking about. Nick Foles is going to elevate that tremendously in terms of, you know, what they've had before. They did lose Malik Jackson to the Philadelphia Eagles, so that's a little bit of a different play there in the middle of that defense. But listen, I think that sound that you're hearing right now is Patrick Mahomes calling the show because he might have something to say about your AFC prediction to
we'll
the
see
Super
on opening
Bowl,
day.
So we'll see.
We'll see on opening day.
I like you. Very confident, Mike. I said AFC South. He says, no, drop the South. We're going
right,
AFC.
Right.
Damien.
Oh, Lord. I know that face.
No, I was just writing it down.
Okay.
I was just writing it down. Okay. AFC South, Jacksonville Jaguars. Okay.
Nick Foles the MVP?
Right. Okay.
Here we go a step further. Nick Foles the MVP?
No, let's pursue a caution here. It's a team sport,
no,
right?
No, Mike, it's too late for caution. You're already out on the nine.
You were almost
brand.
In Nick Foles' will, and then you just backed off.
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you this. If forget the AFC for a minute, but if they're not to have a successful season, what will be the reason why, Damien? Not to go glass half empty.
Well, listen, I think let me take a step back. Talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars defense, I think the reason they took a little bit of a step back last year was because they weren't getting the turnovers like they were getting the year they went to the AFC Championship. They were getting turnovers in bunches. That's what happens a lot of times, like Chicago Bears last year, getting turnovers in bunches. I don't think they'll be able to get the turnovers.
Which a number of people have said it'll be difficult to match that.
It'll be difficult to match that. But I think the area of concern I have with the Jacksonville Jaguars is the skill. Skill, particularly tight end. Mm. Nick Foles, that's one. I mean, when he was in Philadelphia Eagles, they had, you know, Zach Ertz and Goddard, like two really good tight ends. And he really utilized those guys. What does he have in Jacksonville?
Allen Robinson is no longer there.
I'm skeptical. I like Nick Foles, but I'm in wait and see mode.
But the old axiom is you have to control the game to be successful. And I agree, their weapons aren't as good as some of these other teams. A lot of pressure players in the front seven, including Josh Allen, Calais Campbell, Yannick Ngakoue.
Yep.
They can run the ball and they can protect the quarterback. Because of that, I know they're not as explosive as some of these other teams, especially Kansas City, but all those elements are there that they could travel and win on the road. And I think opening day is going to be fascinating. I can't wait to watch Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs offense against the Jaguar defense. That's going to be a great game within a game.
And those wide receivers could get better, too, if they can establish the run game through Leonard Fournette, because I was at that game where he got hurt against the Giants, and you see how everything just tailed off with the Jaguars offense with that hamstring. So hopefully he can, you know, stay healthy and, you know, doesn't have a really big impact on their offense.
You know, it's such a good mix always of, emotion and humor. I mean, it's funny stuff. What's your – you have a standout moment from the weekend?
The fact that he just keeps it so real. He comes up there and he's telling you like it is. I mean, you over here bent over, cracking up. Ed Reed is so special. And when I think about the players that I really have loved covering, you know, so far in my career, it's always those that not are just authentic when you're interviewing them, but that play with soul. And you really feel like that's what Ed really shows in the way that he carries himself, the way that he played. Same with the LOB, you know, in Seattle, but they play with that heart, and that just came out in the speech.
There are so many. I don't know if I can really pick one. I loved, you know, Kevin Mawhide talking, you know, speaking on his dad who was in the military. I thought that was wonderful. Ed Reed, you talked about just his, you know, just how authentic he is and how jovial he is. And then, you know, Champ Bailey, just using the platform to speak on something bigger than the game of football. I thought that was eloquently done.
Yes, too, I mean,
absolutely.
That. It really was.
Well, I was fortunate enough to be there, and I would say we're all fans of the sport, and you got to go. You have to go to camp one day just to learn about the history of it, and it's really a magical night, and they do such a great job. And, you know, for me, as a parent,
each presenter was better than the next about where they came from, what they overcome, thanking their parents, their infrastructure. There were so many great life lessons. Going back to Kevin Mawai for a second, you know, he talked about the incredible juxtaposition of losing a brother in a car accident and having a baby boy and just all the things that they go through and then play at the highest levels that you possibly could play at. It's really, it's a magical night, and I was fortunate enough to be able to go there. I've been there before, and I'm just saying, as a fan of our sport, like, at some point you should go.
I think the "we" stood out to me. You know, so many times they said, and you heard Ty, but also Tony Gonzalez, I think, said it, you know, we are in the Hall of Fame.
That's right.
And not to take away from the unbelievable individual accomplishments, but it does take a village.
Yes.
And it took a lot of folks to get them. And so that "we" really resonated with me, with a couple of different players.
It was really cool. Ty Law talked about that. His financial planner, his track, like, on and on
the
and
week.
On. An uncle. Yeah, it was incredible. All the people that are, you know, in their support system.
And just also how much Champ Bailey is embracing his time with the Denver Broncos. And so you know what the elephant in the room is with regards to that. And letting it be known that a certain team didn't contact him until a few days before that or what have you. Obviously, that's their business. They have to, you know, figure that out. But certainly that stood out. But I actually covered Champ Bailey when he was with the Redskins. I might be dating myself. And also with the Broncos, and certainly was able to see the transition that he experienced, already a big-time player when he was playing with Fred Smoot and those guys back with the Redskins, and everything that he evolved into coming to Denver as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a tremendous weekend. Glad you got to be there. We'll do it again next year. But until then, we've got a new Class 8 Hall of Famers. The league's reigning MVP has had very few hiccups in training camp so far. Patrick Mahomes has been healthy as he gets ready for his first preseason game on Saturday. Despite his record-breaking success in his first full season as a starter, Mahomes says he is still focused on getting better.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could always be better. You learn so much. I mean, I feel like Tom's still getting better every single year. He's learning so much every single year. You get to see what you do well and see what defenses are trying to do to attack you and then find ways to beat that. And it's a chess game. I mean, NFL, I mean, these defensive guys are the best of the best, too, and they're finding ways to stop what you did good this last year. We have to find ways to combat that and go at them and attack them. The behind the back won't be used anytime soon. I'll just say that. Not soon. So, but, I mean, it might come one of these days, but right now I'll focus on hopefully throwing it with the right hand, and then the no look is something that I do practice actually, and hopefully I can utilize a little bit in there in the season.
All right, I'm going to go out on a limb. I think by Tom, he means one Tom Brady, who doesn't need a last name, but just for clarification. Look, you know, Patrick Mahomes, what he did last year was phenomenal, but he's not sneaking up on anybody this time around. Not, you know, he's big things expected, but how does he do what he needs to do, Damian, after setting the bar so high and obviously being no secret now?
Yeah, I think for him, it's all about getting, you know, when you had a year like he's had, sometimes people forget, I mean, this dude can get a lot better. Last year was his first full season starting in the National Football League, and there were plenty of plays, just the basic type thing. We all see the spectacular stuff, but I guarantee you, if you roll the tape throughout the season, there were a number of just basic throws, basic reads that he probably could have gotten better. And I'm sure Andy Reid has probably pointed that out to him. So his numbers might not be as good as they were last year, but he could actually play better than what he played last year.
Yeah, I agree with that. And going back to what Tom Brady said when we discussed him earlier in the show, the game has really slowed down for Tom Brady. There's nothing he hasn't seen before. And think about how good Patrick Mahomes could be with that sort of acumen of the opposing defenses. So he has unbelievable ability, unbelievable talent. I agree with Damian. As the game slows down for him and he could process quicker and know where he's going pre-snap, he really, the sky's the limit. And here's the other thing. I know we live in this day and age of fantasy football. He actually may play better this year and not have the statistics they did from a year ago because they may be a little bit more balanced. Their defense has a chance to be a little bit better. So he may not have the 50 touchdown passes and still may play better, but he is a dynamic player.
Yeah.
Do they do enough to fix this defense, JoJo?
Yeah, well, you've seen they're trying to do that now, obviously, with the acquisition of the Honey Badger. You got to replace, you know, Eric back there, what have you. But what I wanted to say about Patrick Mahomes is that you were saying that the defenses are probably going to start to realize some of the things that he did last year. But I feel like I started to see that a little bit in the game when they were playing the Baltimore Ravens last year, and it only came apart for the Ravens at the end of that game with Lamar Jackson and what have you. So when he was playing some alpha defenses, there was some evidence of some units figuring him out last season. to within reason. Obviously, he performed very well in the AFC Championship game, but a lot of room for him to still improve in terms of, you know, just decision-making under pressure and being, you know, even more accurate under pressure.
I'll ask you the same question. This defense going to be better?
It remains to be seen. I don't know. The last time we seen a Steve Spagnuolo, you know, led defense, I believe it was in the bottom third of the league. They've changed some personnel, and they're going more to a, you know, 4-3 defensive front. So schematically, they're going to be different. Obviously, they added Frank Clark coming over via trade from the Seattle Seahawks. But listen, if they can improve just incrementally, think how much that helps the Kansas City Chiefs, because last year they couldn't stop a nosebleed. So if they just get better, I'm not saying being in the top part of the league, yeah, but just get better somewhat. I mean, this Kansas City, this Chiefs team is going to be right there again vying for the Super Bowl.
And the main thing is not to be predictable, because I remember Derek Johnson was telling me with their former defensive coordinator that before they changed DC's, you know, going to Steve Spagnuolo, that he felt personally that they were too predictable and that their former defensive coordinator did not evolve enough over time. So hopefully you'll see a little bit more in terms of modifications and what they do, and with offenses not seeing, you know, what they're doing, and then with the additional pieces like you mentioned, particularly Frank Clark.
They have one player on defense that we haven't touched on, Chris Jones. He is a dynamic player. I would say that he's under the radar, but he really isn't anymore. He's an interior pass rusher. He's not Aaron Donald, but he could really affect the game on all three downs. He's a really good interior pass rusher. Obviously, as you mentioned, they added Frank Clark, but if they could get pressure, look, they're going to have the lead because of their passing attack, so teams are going to throw against them. If they could get pressure consistently, they have a chance to have a really good season. And again, not to make too much of any one game, opening day against the Jacksonville Jaguars in Jacksonville.
Oh, here we go.
I hope your prediction doesn't get debunked out the gate, you know, when they play the Kansas.
There'll be no debunking.
Because Mahomes might have a couple messages to send to you.
I got a question for you.
No debunking.
Is this game in Jacksonville?
Yes,
sure
it is.
You think I'm talking about so much?
Yes, I do. I think you might.
And Mahomes' arm still works in the humidity. I'm just saying.
Oh, it's going to be hot. It's going to be hot.
We're going to find out. That's the beauty of it, right?
That's right.
We'll find out a lot more about Cam Newton as well. Panthers quarterback was back on the field today along with his teammates as the Carolina Panthers continue to make their way through camp. He is, of course, making his way back from offseason shoulder surgery, and reports of Newton's progress say that they are all headed in the right direction. His head coach seems pleased. Here is Ron Rivera.
Been a lot of positives. He's throwing the deep ball. He's throwing the ball underneath very well. He's making quick decisions. You know, this is the second year in this system, not just for him, but for the whole group. You see the playmakers that are around him. You see the development and growth right now of the offensive line. So there's a lot of reason to be optimistic right now.
And I know he said last week he didn't have to be Superman anymore. To me, it's kind of a big statement for him. I know he wants to be Superman, but not having to be is big for him.
I think it is big for him, but also I think it speaks to the growth of our skill players. I think for the first time, you know, he feels comfortable enough with these guys that, you know, hey, he can distribute the ball, and that's kind of what we're looking for.
David Newton joins us from Panthers camp at Wofford College. And, David, we heard what Coach Rivera had to say about Cam and his progress. What have you seen in the recent days at camp?
Well, Wendy, what I've seen is if you didn't know Cam Newton was coming off shoulder surgery, you probably wouldn't know it. I mean, he's been able to do everything that the Panthers have asked him to do. At Fan Fest on Friday night, he flicked about a 45, 50-yard pass like it was nothing. He couldn't do that last year. He couldn't throw the ball 30 yards effectively. He's had probably his best couple of practices the last few days. He did struggle a little bit today because of some tip passes. But I've really seen a quarterback that's confident, and he's really focused. I took the quiet, because I asked Ron Rivera, I've asked North Turner, everybody, is Cam quieter than he was a year ago? And they said, he is quieter, and that's a good thing. And he's also more focused out here. So he's really wanting to be a year where he can prove himself and prove a lot of the naysayers that what happened with his shoulder is not going to impact his future.
Interesting, David. And on the other side of the ball, Luke Kuechly held out of some drills. We'll talk about that. They do not believe that to be anything major, but again, held out due to injury. What do you make of this Panthers team, JoJo, with Cam coming back and maybe a point to prove, a chip on his shoulder a little bit?
Well, one thing about what Dave Newton was saying, I do think it's good that they're saying that he looks good in practice, particularly with the time that he actually did the shoulder surgery. So I was a little bit concerned about that. But I still want to see if that shoulder lasts over the duration of a game. It's one thing to do it in practice, you know, 7-on-7s and 11-on-11s, but you just want to see that that shoulder's not fatiguing from the first quarter through the fourth quarter. I definitely think it'll be interesting. They have a lot to prove. But with the addition of Gerald McCoy, remember, he picked this team over the Ravens and the Browns because he felt good about the chemistry on the team, about, you know, what he was seeing from, you know, Cam Newton. It'll be interesting to see if this running game continues to evolve with Christian McCaffrey. Remember, they did not use C.J. Anderson. He went to the Rams and did very well for the Rams as well. But they have to come back because the way that Cam Newton played at the end, that's not a lasting memory that all of us want to have in terms of him being out there struggling or whatever. He wants to reclaim how he played. I believe it was 2015 when they went to the Super Bowl. That's the Cam Newton that people are looking to see, to be able to lead that team with that type of leadership to that deep into the postseason.
Well, one thing I will say that I really like what the Panthers did from an organization standpoint is they addressed their pass rush. You know, the axiom in pro football is, how do we win our division? Well, if you're the Carolina Panthers, you have to beat Drew Brees. You have to beat Matt Ryan. And Josina, you already touched on it. They added Gerald McCoy, but they also drafted Brian Burns in the first round. They signed Bruce Irvin. So I loved how they were so aggressive trying to address their pass rush because, again, Luke Kuechly is a great player. Cam Newton's coming back off injury. But if they can't defend those other two quarterbacks, they can't get to where they want to go.
Well, I mean, really, that's been their identity for years, is being able to, you know, play great defense, get after the quarterback, run the football. This is a big year for Ron Rivera. Make no mistake about it. This is a big year.
New ownership.
Yeah, you're right. You know, last year fell apart. So,
Hopefully, healthy Cam.
Cam has to be right. Yeah. Cam has to be right this year. If not, there could be a situation Barry was watching down there in Carolina.
Carolina hasn't missed the playoffs, by the way. Sorry, it's in back-to-back seasons since Cam's first 2 years. So 2011 and 12. It's been a while.
This is an underratedly tough division. You know, when you talk about dealing four games with Matt Ryan and Drew Brees alone, it is a tough division. And I agree, they're better on defense, but I can see one team coming out of this division come playoff time.
Where in the world is Dan Graziano? His training camp tour started in New Jersey with the Giants. He then took a tour of the NFC North. He was with the Vikings, the Packers, and Bears. And after spending the weekend in Indy, Dan now in Cincinnati with the Bengals today. So today we catch up with Dan in Cincinnati, and he's going to start, of course, with the Bengals. Dan, there you are. Tell us what's going on there. Let's start there, why don't we?
Bengals are heading out to practice now, Wendy, but we did get a chance earlier in the day to talk to some players. I talked to Carlos Dunlap, their defensive end, and he really was stressing how new everything is. And it's been a long time since stuff was new around here. Not only a new defense to learn, but what it's like practicing against that offense that new head coach Zach Taylor is putting in. And he lit up. He said, the scheme, it's really something. It's something to see. You can tell that it's innovative. It's different. It keeps you on your toes. He said, for us to be practicing against it every day and have it still be challenging us, that tells you something. And I also talked to their center, Billy Price, who said, you know, it's a lot different from last year. He said, last year's playbook was like 80 pages. This is a few concepts, a few formations. Hone it, and let's go. So they're a little fired up about some of the new stuff that's being put in here.
All right, fair enough. Now let's talk about the Colts. You were there over the weekend. We talked about Andrew Luck earlier. That calf injury may be starting to be a little cause for concern. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, well, look, as long as he's not practicing, it's a cause for concern, right? Because they want Andrew Luck to be out there, and they're not the same team without him. When I spoke to Frank Reich, the head coach, he said, look, everybody knows we're missing an elite player, an elite leader, and obviously the practice would be, you know, smoother and easier if he was there. He said, but we've got to continue to do what we're doing, and hopefully he'll be back sooner rather than later. Reich doesn't have a timetable for Luck's return. They're definitely holding him out the next few days, and they'll see. But they are falling back on the fact that last year was a shoulder, a lot different, obviously, than the calf for a quarterback. He said, but Andrew really took charge of his rehab last year, and they really felt like, you know, he's very responsible about what he needs to do to get back on the field. So they have a lot of trust in the player. Obviously, they're hoping that whatever timetable he needs is a little bit accelerated.
All right, now tomorrow you head to the Browns, and over the weekend we saw the quarterback,
yes,
Baker Mayfield. I don't know if you saw it, Dan, but he showed off some of his chugging skills. He's joining this sweeping of the league of chugging situations. And the question, I think, are you able to challenge Baker Mayfield once you're there?
Well.
Yeah. I want to know.
Once I'm there, yeah. I got 4 hours to drive yet tonight. So I can't do it right now and show everybody. Right. But that would be highly irresponsible. So nobody do that. But, when I get there, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, like, practice is late in the morning. Josina has been there plenty. She knows what the day is like. So, Josina, is there a way, like, to engage in some chugging with the quarterback after practice or maybe in the evening? I have to look into this, and I will get back to you guys.
Okay, it's noon somewhere, Dan. Don't let that be it. We're fine with it, okay? Don't worry about it. All right.
Don't be a wimp.
All right, thank you, Dan.
My name is Bennett, and I'm not in it with that question.
Okay, all right. Let's talk about this. First of all, let's do talk about the Browns on a little more serious note for just a minute, because you have some concerns if things aren't sort of – if they don't go exactly according to plan, which they never will in the NFL.
Yeah, listen, the Browns are in a different position than they have been in years past, where they're now the hunted because of all the attention that they've gotten with the Odell Beckham trade, and obviously the year that Baker Mayfield has come off of, and new head coach Freddie Kitchens. How do they manage expectations? I think that's an area that remains to be seen.
Well, let's talk about the AFC North. How many teams come out of that division for the playoffs? We know you got the Jags in, so you can do the math here. Damian, take us through this, and we will have time for rebuttals. Mm.
Well, I mean, this is me. I know okay. Mike is looking to try to chop. This is me. This is me. Listen, AFC East. I think we can all agree the Patriots in the AFC East.
You're on this. Okay,
yeah. Listen, AFC North. Look at JoJo already.
She's not even waiting.
Listen, wow. Mike, we talked about it. Mike Tomlin, blue chip stock. Mm-hmm. John Harbaugh, blue chip stock.
Mike Tomlin's never had a losing
never
record.
Never had a losing career. Record, but I guess we're all in on Freddie Kitchens.
It's going to be either
you're all
this
in on Freddie Kitchens.
Or this.
So you're not buying Big Ben.
I got the Steelers.
Me too.
I just think there's too many pieces in place.
They've been quiet.
Here's what's great about our sport on paper. Obviously, the Browns are markedly improved. Coaching matters. John Harbaugh, Mike Tomlin, two of the very best our sport has. The only grade Freddie Kitchens gets is a grade of incomplete. We just don't know yet.
And that's why we have to. He may be a Hall of Fame coach.
That's right.
We just don't know.
That's right. Well, let's not go Cleveland and Cannon quite yet.
No, wait, now you've got a grade of Paul Tom Brady. Jaguars to the Super Bowl.
Jaguars won the next Super Bowl.
Right. Now, I had your back on that one. Man,
AFC South, I mean, there's some disagreement here. Look, Mike just printed.
My cornerback's practicing.
But can I say this? I talked to Eric Ebron last night. He told me definitively, and I'll put this on my Twitter later, that the Colts will win the AFC.
Let me help you out.
According to Eric, this is in writing for him.
And listen, for me, I think the Chargers are going to win the West this year.
Mm. I personally would like to see Philip Rivers have a chance to win the Super Bowl before it's all out. All right, Damian, we got to go. Too much time talking about those Browns. We got to go. We'll be back on Tuesday. Listen, Mike's looking forward to week one, the Chiefs and the Jags. That is a Super Bowl preview, if you haven't heard, or not really a preview because they can't both go.
AFC.
Jacksonville.
AFC. AFC.
I can't wait.
All right, listen, we'll be back tomorrow. And Mike, too. See you then.